Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm your host, Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Our guest today is Kristen Mullen. Kristen grew up in Massachusetts as one of five children. She was raised as a conservative Catholic before going to Hamilton College, majoring in world politics with a focus on Latin America. She lived in Costa Rica for 6 months in college and went back to Central America to work and live in Guatemala and El Salvador. When she worked in a high school in Brooklyn with refugee teens, she realized she needed to learn more about how to support folks who are healing from complex trauma. She got her master's degree in counseling psychology at NYU. After graduation, she and her boyfriend, who is now her husband, Tim Weaver, moved to the West Coast. Tim worked toward a teaching credential, and Kristen worked toward a license in marriage and family therapy. They wanted to have children. After many years of infertility treatment, they were fortunate to have twin boys. After waiting so long to be parents, even the challenges have been a gift, a joy. Their 14 years of parenting Will and Sam have been the happiest times of their lives. They love being parents, and the boys teach them so much about loving and growing. The boys are both so curious about life and open to life. Kristen specializes in treating anxiety, trauma, and life transitions. She helps people access the expansive and healing capacities of the unconscious mind in the therapeutic relationship. She's skilled in working pragmatically, helping people communicate better, shift habits of negative thinking, and solve troubling life concerns. She is a certified eye movement desensitization reprocessing therapist with advanced training in attachment-based EMDR. She has completed certification in heart math biofeedback and flash technique to decrease the intensity of acute trauma and stress. She practices experiential play therapy with children and families. Kristen has more than 25 years of clinical experience in a variety of settings, including child abuse treatment programs, public schools, a family support center, a transitional housing program, child welfare, and many years at Kaiser Permanente in the Department of Outpatient Psychiatry. She has a private psychotherapy practice and provides training to teachers, clinicians, and paraprofessionals in trauma-informed healing. She's a bilingual therapist and works with immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers. She loves international travel, which she used to do a lot before having kids. She loves hiking and yoga and biking with her family. She loves reading a lot and is in a book club. She loves being an activist and fighting for social justice. She loves Latin American literature and breaking free and getting creative in her life. Kristen, welcome to the Connections Podcast. I'm so glad to be able to sit down with you for this discussion. Let's start with a question I love to ask, which is, what were you like as a child?
Let's see, what was I like as a child? I think I was a mix of a lot of things. I was loud, like people used to say that I was loud. In fact, my siblings used to say that Evel Knievel could not jump my mouth. So yes, I was really talkative. I think I felt things deeply. I was in some ways reckless and in other ways very, very careful. I was worried. I was playful. I was definitely like a tomboy. I loved to play guerrilla warfare with my father's military stuff with my brothers. And I had a hard time sitting still when my older sister did my nails. I daydreamed a lot. I was spacing out a lot. I had lots of different parts that were not always working together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there anything about your childhood that would have made anyone think that your higher education and even parts of your career would focus on Latin America?
I was always very much a feeling like a sensitive person. My parents had lost their businesses and moved away from the town I grew up in the same year I went to college. They lost our house and everything. And they were struggling financially. They moved from Massachusetts to Virginia. And it was a lonely time for me. And as a first generation college student, when I'd been in a public school in a small town, and I didn't really fit in this small liberal arts college that for many had been like an extension of their prep school experience. You know, I didn't really have the right clothes or anything. So I ended up feeling more connected with those who didn't fit in kind of in this WASPy environment. I was not a big fan of Greek life, and Hamilton had a lot of Greek life. So I basically made friends with international folks. I discovered the Emerson Literary Society, and my two closest friends in college were Latina. I was studying Spanish, and I took a class with a feminist, socially conscious professor. She introduced me to like Edward Galeano and Noam Chomsky. Edward Galeano wrote The Open Veins of Latin America. I became obsessed with looking at U.S. involvement in Central America. And I was just angry because I'd been raised to believe that our government was moral and reasonable. And so I really got angry and shifted my political affiliations just based on my deep passion related to learning about the U.S.'s role in Central America and in Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners more about the time that you spent in Guatemala and El Salvador.
So that was after college, but I wanted to go back to Central America. I didn't really know how to stay there. I started working in a bar in Guatemala City, and I volunteered with children. And then I had to leave that job because it was a little dangerous. Coming home so late at 2 or 3 in the morning to my hostel was not really safe. So then I found a job as an international observer. I did an international observer in the elections, both in Guatemala and in El Salvador. So I met a lot of expats and I lived with families, and I was really interested in how to support democracy and allowing for more people to have a voice in these countries, you know.
Right.
And I was there when the FMLN had the first time that they were like the Frente, the progressives were invited to participate in the election in El Salvador. For me, it was a big deal, and I was really interested in hanging out with all the journalists and writing about it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. How did you and Tim first meet?
We actually met in middle school. I transferred from a Catholic school to the public school in 8th grade, and Tim had the locker right next to me, and I didn't know how to use lockers. I just couldn't figure out how to get it open. He was very kind and would open my locker for me. And he was just a really nice guy. He was my friend for a while, and then we started dating in 10th grade, and then we kind of on and off dated for a long time, even sometimes through college. And then I think we broke up in college at some point. And then a couple of years after college, we got back together. So we met when we were like 14.
Right. After you got your master's at NYU, what made you and Tim decide to move out to the West Coast?
Tim had lived in Tahoe. He had been out in Tahoe, I think, for about 9 months with friends. He stayed and with his brothers. When we were in New York, he was like, we should move out to the West Coast, try San Francisco. And he just loved the West Coast vibe that he had experienced a couple of years before. I was like, sure. And I just thought we'd stay a couple of years, but we just liked it and didn't go back. Yeah.
Share with our listeners more about your psychotherapy practice, including, of course, EMDR and heart math biofeedback and flash technique, and really anything else you'd like to include.
all of these are just modalities to support healing, right? EMDR is, you use bilateral stimulation, like basically helping your brain to process trauma. Sometimes we have memories and such that are frozen in time. With those memories, our beliefs about ourselves or about the world, like we're not capable or the world's not a safe place, we start to melt those ice cubes, so to speak, in this and help those integrate those memories into a place where these beliefs maybe shift about ourselves and the world in ways as we do some healing around some trauma. Flash technique is really just a form, it's like EMDR, but we're not going into the trauma. We're really helping a person to be able to put some distance between them and a really painful memory and process it unconsciously, really. Kids naturally process, and when we're sleeping, for example, during REM sleep, we process memories in a way that helps us to let go of false ideas about ourselves and about the world. You can do that, like when I was at the border, I went to the border to Matamoros, which is on the other side of Mexico, where asylum seekers were waiting to come into the country to file for asylum. And you can do experiential kind of forms of EMDR with kids in the camps just by jump rope and songs and things like that, helping kids to process trauma so it doesn't become their lens, their view, right, about themselves and the world. There's a lot of different trainings and such that I've done, both learning it and then sharing what I've learned. In Texas was a lot. But I did at the University of Texas, I did a training for a bunch of graduate students in counseling, and they were wanting skills to go volunteer in Matamoros. And so it was really, really exciting. There were four of us. One was a professor there, and then three of us were from California, and we presented material to support them and help them to have some skills. We did some different forms of playful bilateral stimulation and talked about how kids process trauma, like through song and through rhythm and crossing the midline. Like these things are what we found, these patterns, these rhythms help to process traumatic memories in a way that doesn't allow the person to stay with this belief that the world is an unsafe place, right?
Wow, that's so interesting. How did you get interested in becoming a psychotherapist? How did that happen?
I think probably some of my own trauma as a kid, but also witnessing, like when I worked in Brooklyn at the high school and I was helping immigrant kids get connected to internships and jobs to help them to feel more integrated into the community. They started telling me stories about things that they had witnessed or lived through. I felt sometimes at a loss as to how to support them. I wanted to help them process this in a way that was healing. And so I decided to pursue a graduate degree in counseling psychology. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when someone comes to you, how do you determine what modality is most likely to help them?
I've studied a lot of different modalities, and oftentimes I will share with them what's in my toolbox, and then they intuitively go to what makes sense for them. It's really both of us trying things out, and it's in the moment, really. Yeah,
right.
Like what makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I have a sand tray, and I have art, and I have a lot of things that we play with.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've been doing this for such a long time. You must love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I have puppets too.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling somebody today about this puppet I have. His name's Miguel. And Miguel is really great at helping to reduce shame, particularly for boys that come into my office. Little kids love Miguel and they ask Miguel questions. Miguel is is separate from me. And so it's helpful. They sometimes want to hear from this little kid, Miguel, and his experience. They feel like they've had a shared experience like Miguel. For example, I did a boys' sexual abuse group, and the boys, most of them had some sexually reactive behavior in addition to being hurt. And they had a lot of shame around that. I talked about Miguel's story and how he had been touched in inappropriate ways. And then he enacted that with some other kids. And they were like, oh, Miguel, that happened to me too. They just loved hearing about Miguel's story and how Miguel has worked with the pain around that. The boys would be under the table and be asking questions about it and be, I did that too, Miguel. You feel so bad. And just being able to process it, and it just breaks the shame. And yeah, it's powerful. Or the ways Miguel processes it and how, and then they would be more open to it because they didn't want to hear it from some therapist. They wanted to hear it from a cool little boy, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Kristen, would you talk about your years of infertility? In infertility treatments. It's not something I typically ask, but you're very open about it.
Mm-hmm. Tim and I weren't really into the idea of getting married. I'm one of five kids and all my siblings got married and I had to be in all these weddings. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do the wedding thing. But then at some point we both were like, we want to have a kid. And then we were joking that kids are so conservative. He's a teacher and they really like the idea of your parents being married, kids do. So we were like, okay, let's do this so it will help the kids feel more secure, you know? And so that's the reason we come here. Obviously, we love each other. And we were like, all right, we'll do this marriage thing. And the marriage thing was cool. But we instantly were trying to have kids, but it just wasn't happening for a very long time. And it was really hard. It was quite a journey. We both had a long process through it. We had a lot of unsuccessful things happen over time, but eventually we had an IVF cycle that worked. They said, though, even that cycle, they were like, well, we'll just throw these in. I don't think it's going to work. They just were negative about it. And then we got twins. So we were like, oh my God, we were so happy. Yeah, for us, twins was like all our dreams come true. So we felt very, very blessed. And when it was challenging or hard, we both just were like, it's okay. I think if I just had twins at 25 easily, it probably wouldn't have been the same as eventually at 37 having twins and feeling so grateful and blessed. And Tim and I both. He's like a mother too. I mean, he's a father, obviously, but I joke with people that I'm like, no, you don't understand. They have two deeply maternal figures. So they're very blessed children.
And they are Sam and Will, and they are 14 years old now. So are they in high school?
Middle school.
Eighth
grade. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tell our listeners more about them and what they're into.
Yeah, they're funny. They're cheeky. They challenge us both, keep us on our toes. They're both very athletic. I had dreamed about having kids who are artistic and want to be into theater, but they're not that at all. But I just love them, whatever they're into. I'm excited for them. You learn so much as a parent. I don't care if they like the things I like. I love learning what they like, but they both really like sports and they both like moving their bodies a lot. They're both very active. They both love doing backflips on trampolines, and Will likes practicing cartwheels, and Will likes practicing tricks, and Sam's always been a Lego guy, but now he's moved on from Legos, and he's very, very serious about his studies. He comes home every day and he's always studying or getting homework done, and Will doesn't ever seem to do homework. I'm like, Will, aren't you in the same classes? They both do well in school. They both care about their studies. They both care about their friends. They're both really excited about life. They love going camping. They love going to Tahoe. They love adventure. And, well, we both like adventure too. So yeah. There's a lot of things we share in common.
Let's shift to your religious biography. How did a nice conservative Catholic girl end up raising her kids in a Unitarian Universalist community?
Well, I had mixed experiences with Catholicism when I was a kid. I actually felt really good about having a peaceful place to pray when I was a kid. I liked being part of something like pancake breakfast and having rituals and the stability of it. Of course, I wanted to help out in the church, and they wouldn't really let me pass the basket or do, like back then it was a little more, I think now they let girls do more, but there were more jobs for boys. But I actually had some lovely moments with Jesuit priests, both in Central America and in growing up. I even remember confiding in a Jesuit priest when I was a teenager about something that had happened, and he was very empathic. So I had some good experiences, but I knew that I needed something much different than the Catholicism as an adult. I needed gay people and women. I needed trans people. I needed all the diversity of people to be treated with great respect. I knew, given my spiritual desires, to be part of a sacred community, but I needed it to be more in line with my politics and with social justice. The first time I came to UUSM, they were singing De Colores in Spanish, and they were talking about protests that folks were going to that week. And I just felt like, oh yeah, I knew I wanted to join this church, but I was nervous. It took me 6 or 7 years to become a member because I just didn't know if there was going to be another shoot. Like I kept waiting for some weird cultish thing or something. I don't know. I wasn't very trusting.
How did you find out about UUSM?
That's interesting. I think from going to rallies, I met people who said that they went to the Unitarian Church. And also, Tim's dad and mom got married in a Unitarian church. And so I really like Tim's dad. I love Tim's mom too. She died last year, but I love Tim's dad. We like to talk about intellectual things, and he likes to talk politics. And I trusted him too, because he told me the Unitarians are cool. I think that it was a mixture of different things I'd heard over the years. And I was like, okay, I'll go check it out. And I went by myself a few times before I had kids. And then once I had kids, I'm like, Tim, we need to take them to church. And he's like, what? You don't want to be Catholic? I'm like, no. We're going to go to a cool church. Yeah. You know? But Tim's not as much into going to church as I am. He's like, oh, I'm going to take the boys mountain biking. I'm like, no, I'm taking them to church. So right. We have to divide. Sometimes I can get him to come to church.
Yeah. So at this point in your life, what do you love doing when you're not working? It seems like you spend a lot of time working, but when you're not working, what do you love to do most?
Right. I love to be with my kids, and I love to be with Tim, and I love breathing and doing yoga and hiking and being out in nature. I like being in community with people who inspire me. I like learning. I like reading. I love reading. I like being challenged in my thinking. I used to do some improv classes. I like playing and doing improv. But I haven't done that in a while.
We're going to wrap this up with some quick hitters. I'll ask you a quick question. You give me an answer. Are you ready?
Sure.
What's the last book you recommended to somebody?
Let's see. It was Deacon King Kong by James McBride. It's really quite good. It's African-American community in Brooklyn. It's like the 60s. It's really before drugs got really into the projects in New York, and it's just wonderful. It's beautifully written and so complex and interesting.
Oh, good. And what are you reading right now?
I'm reading Brainstorm by Daniel Siegel, and also I'm reading Inez of My Soul by Isabel Allende. I love Isabel Allende, but I'm really trying to get into Brainstorm, which is understanding the adolescent brain.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For fun, I read fiction, but I try to read too for my work as a therapist. So I kind of do both, you know. Yeah.
What kinds of things keep you up at night?
Let's see. Authoritarianism
Yeah.
that seems to be spreading like wildfire. Families that I'm seeing and how to help them disentangle from patterns that don't seem to be serving them. My kids, like, will they be safe? Will they connect with their inner wisdom, their truth? Will they make good decisions, uphold their values, right?
Right.
I love the metta chant that we sing at UUSM. I always cry when I sing it at church, and I sing it when I wake up at 2 in the morning. The may we all be safe, may it all be well, may all know joy, may all be free. That's soothing to me. It's comforting.
Yes, yeah.
But the geopolitical issues really are very overwhelming with so much pain right now.
Yeah.
With all the identities that the intensity, the reactivity.
Yeah. If you could eat only one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I really love homemade Indian food. So good.
Do
That
you cook a lot of Indian food?
No, I've taken a couple classes, but no, I don't. I'm fortunate enough to have friends who can cook really good Indian food.
Great. Okay. What's the most used app on your phone?
Texting, and after that, I use Audible podcast, and I use the Calm app. I do the daily calm. Yeah, and I do meditations.
What's the worst movie you ever saw?
Gosh, the worst movie. I can't remember the name, but I went to this movie with Tim that he picked out, and there were these like 10-year-old little boys in front of us, and it was horrific. And there was a baby like crying behind us, and I was watching it at the screen, and it's like some woman being raped on some stairs, and it was horrific. And I'm watching all these little boys watching this. It was the most traumatic experience for me. I'm like, how do they let these little kids into this movie, and why am I sitting here watching this and being exposed to all that's happening? And the little baby was crying because I could tell the baby didn't know it was happening, but obviously knew that somebody was in distress. It's awful. I can't remember the name of the movie, but Tim knows, but I blocked that stuff out. It's awful. I'm like, I'm never letting you pick a movie again. It was
That
terrible.
was the question I was about to ask. Is he banned from picking the movie? Yeah.
Yes, he is. That was terrible. Ugh.
What is your favorite place on earth?
Right now, anywhere my kids and Tim are, but I do really love Cahuita and Manuel Antonio in Costa Rica. I like Roatan. It's an island off of Honduras. I love Tulum, Mexico, but that was like 20 years ago, so I don't know what it's like now. But I haven't been to many islands in many years, but when I was younger, I loved some of the islands in Central America. But mostly for me now, it's just like anywhere my little family is, where
Sure.
they are.
What's the best concert you ever attended?
Let's see. Ani DeFranco came to my college, and I really like her. Sweet Honey in the Rock, that's like an a cappella group, a women of color, BIPOC group, singing group, that's really good. I also saw the Indigo Girls in Vermont. All three were really good.
Good. When a film is made about your life, and it undoubtedly will be, what song will they play at the end?
Let's see. That's a good question. Lately, I've been listening to Stevie Nicks, Landslide, but that's, or maybe Janis Joplin, Piece of My Heart.
Okay, yeah.
I think I used to think it was Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. Oh, I think
Some
so.
good ones.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about yourself?
I'm empathic. I'm compassionate, and I'm growing self-compassion as well. So, yeah, it's a good thing. We all need that.
Yes, we do. We do. The world does. Yeah.
Yeah, the world does.
Thank you so much, Kristen. This has been so much fun, and I've learned so much about you. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me for the UUSM Connections podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did it. Many thanks, as always, to our listeners. Keep making connections. You did it.
Yay. Yeah, and it wasn't too bad. It wasn't painful. I for some reason I thought I'd be more nervous, but I wasn't too nervous.
Good.
Yeah.